Conventional wisdom has it that 1939 was the best year for movies. That was the year of Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. But two people involved in the film business now dare to challenge the primacy of 1939. They say 1962 was best, and they join me now to explain themselves. Stephen Farber writes for Movie Line magazine and is working on a book about the 1962 thesis. And Mike McClellan is vice president of film at Landmark Theaters. Stephen Farber, list some of those 1962 films that make it such a notable year for movies.
Lawrence of Arabia, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Manchurian Candidate, Days of Wine and Roses, Lolita, Jules and Jim. That's just for starters.
Mike McClellan, what is it about 1962 that we have this long list of great films in a single year?
I think, well, what happened in that year was the end of the studio era, which was on its last leg. So you had the emergence of a number of new filmmakers, new directors who had actually come out of television, but still you had a number of the old masters who were still making films.
What is it now, Pilgrim? Your conscience?
Isn't it enough to kill a man without trying to build a life on it?
You talk too much. Besides, you didn't kill Liberty Valance.
John Ford made The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. William Wyler made a film that year, The Children's Hour.
One thing that's worth saying is, as you mentioned, the great studio era was coming to an end. The studios were floundering a bit. And as a result of that, I think they were open to new ideas, new filmmakers, more daring material, because they were kind of desperate. Therefore, it was a time when there was much more openness to experimentation, to sort of unconventional film subject matter. And so they were really willing to experiment with films that had more audacious subject matter. And that's why they did Lolita.
Let's listen to a little bit of Lolita. Remind us of the film and introduce this particular scene.
Stanley Kubrick, who was a new filmmaker who got together a great cast, James Mason, Peter Sellers, Shelley Winters, newcomer Sue Lyon, who was only 14 when she did the movie. And they had a lot of problems with censorship at the time, but they plunged ahead and did it. And what was really daring about the movie, besides the sort of sexually audacious subject matter, was the comedy of the film, the fact that it mixed sort of a serious adult sexual theme with kind of black comedy. Audiences were unaccustomed to that kind of audacious black comedy at that time, but it gave Sellers a chance to play several different characters, and in this scene he plays sort of a Germanic school psychologist who's trying to persuade James Mason to let his so-called stepdaughter, actually mistress, Lolita, appear in the school play, and it's kind of indicative of the offbeat, quirky, unconventional humor of the movie.
We are wondering, has anybody instructed Lolita in the facts of life?
The facts?
The facts of life. You see, Lolita is a sweet little child, but the onset of maturity seems to be giving her a certain amount of trouble.
I really don't think that this is a fit topic.
Well, Dr. Humberts, to you, she's still the little girl that is cradled in the arms. But to those boys over there at Beardsley High, she is a lovely girl, you know.
It is a great comic scene with Peter Sellers. 1962 was also the year that To Kill a Mockingbird was released, as you mentioned. And in this scene, Gregory Peck portrays Atticus Finch giving his closing argument before the jury. He's defending a black man wrongly accused of raping a white woman.
Now I say guilt, gentlemen.
Because it was guilt that motivated her. She's committed no crime. She has merely broken a rigid and time-honored code of our society. A code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst, is unfit to live with. She must destroy the evidence of her offense. But what was the evidence of her offense? Tom Robinson.
one of the most striking aspects of this film and also of several of these films was that they were actually ahead of their time or were in the vanguard of what was happening in society. For this film, 1962, To Kill a Mockingbird, 1 year before the March on Washington and Martin Luther King's seminal speech of that year. And one of the most salient aspects of 1962 was that most of these films that we're discussing dealt with serious subjects, and they were very intelligently told, extremely well acted. And then the advent of the internationalization of the cinema, which was one of the points of why this year is so profound, is that there was this burgeoning internationalism in cinema and the effect that it had on Hollywood at the time.
You mentioned things that happened shortly after 1962.
Correct.
1963 was the year that President Kennedy was assassinated, and in 1962, one of the big films that year was about an assassination attempt, The Manchurian Candidate. Tell me about that film and introduce the scene that we have for that film.
It was a subject that was kind of unheard of at the time, the idea that a major political figure could be targeted for an assassination plot. And it was something that was kind of mind-boggling but seemed sort of fanciful at the time. Nobody would have dreamt that 1 year later it would actually come true. But in this scene, we actually hear the sort of mastermind behind the plot, played by Angela Lansbury.
You are to shoot the presidential nominee through the head, and Johnny will rise gallantly to his feet and lift Ben Arthur's body in his arms, stand in front of the microphones and begin to speak. The speech is short, but it's the most rousing speech I've ever read. It's been worked on here and in Russia on and off for over 8 years. I shall force someone to take the body away from him. Then Johnny will really hit those microphones and those cameras with blood all over him, fighting off anyone who tries to help him, defending America even if it means his own death, rallying a nation of television viewers into hysteria to sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy.
It's chilling to hear that now in the context of what's happened since.
And it's also interesting about how this is being designed partly for, or mostly for, TV viewers, television audiences. And we know how prophetic that comment was, how influential what we see on television is on the mass public today, and that that was sort of the cornerstone of the plot. And that's a frightening comment because we certainly know how very influential those TV cameras can be in kind of molding public opinion.
Mike McClellan, we've had 40 years of some of the biggest box office hits in movie history since 1962. Just 1 year in particular, 1979, there was All That Jazz, Apocalypse Now, Breaking Away, Kramer versus Kramer, Norma Rae, Manhattan, Picnic at Hanging Rock. What makes 1962 sort of better than that year, 1979, or any of the other years since?
1962, if you look at the number of films and the breadth and the depth of the subjects and the issues that they were discussing. Yes, you can list numbers of films from numbers of years, but dealing with the weight of the issues involved and the talent, the other years really do pale by comparison.
Also, I think of those films you list from 1979, there weren't many foreign films of significance in that year. And 62 was, of course, the heyday of all the great foreign film directors, Truffaut, René, Antonioni, Buñuel, Kurosawa. They were all at the height of their powers making movies, Ingmar Bergman. And those foreign films had a tremendous influence, not just on the filmmakers of that era, but on later filmmakers like Coppola and Scorsese, who have talked about the tremendous influence that the seminal foreign films had on them. So it was that combination of so many talented filmmakers all working productively and very prolifically in 1 year that made 1962 stand out.
Mike McClellan is Vice President of Film at Landmark Theaters, which recently hosted a festival of 1962 films. And Stephen Farber is working on a book about the great film year of 1962. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.